This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you after quite an exhilarating weekend. Manchester United came down to New Griffin Park. They thought they'd go away with maximum points, and they went home almost humiliated. I say almost humiliated. We absolutely played them off the park. We'll talk about that later. They got a goal right at the death. But the Bees got a goal at the death plus one, as we call it. My name's Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in... This is a proper virtual joint. I'm actually sitting here international style. Talking about the Bees... Talking to my man Laney, who is internationally in the UK, while I'm a stateside at the moment. Laney, how are you?
Yes, good, mate. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, it's as you said, an exhilarating match on Saturday night, wasn't it? And the midweek ones come around really quickly, so we got to follow what was a really cracking performance up with another one against Brighton on Wednesday night. So yeah, it's heating up. You know, the there's games tonight, there's games tomorrow, and then obviously we've got Aston Villa at the weekend. So yeah, it's they're coming thick and fast at the moment.
Definitely coming thick and fast. And like I said to you, we said on Saturday, or even before Saturday, it's a 9-match season. It's actually now an 8-match season, an 8-game season, as we say. We've ticked one off, the Manchester United game, and we managed to chisel some points away from them, even though some will argue that we should have, or some, the whole world, will argue we should have got 3 points off of them. But my argument is that, listen, it's all about getting points on the table. And we chiseled 1 point away from a team that maybe other teams will turn around and they wouldn't have got anything out of it. Would Forest have got anything out of Man United? You know, well, that Man United probably is. Or Luton or Burnley. You know, that's the point about getting points on the table as well. And interestingly, I think there was a chart going around today, because like I said to you, going down the other day, it's from the BBC, and I know a lot of people, there's a lot of fear about, you know, how Brentford are kind of getting on, because unless we're actually mathematically safe, they're saying, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what anybody else might say. We need to see ourselves mathematically safe. So the fear is always there about relegation. The predicted final Premier League table. This is in BBC Sport now. We have got no idea where these figures have come from, because unfortunately our 538 that we used to use isn't applied anymore. So there's all sorts of various charts all over the place, but we're not sure exactly which model to go for. If you know which one to go for, actually, maybe just drop us a line. Let us know. If XG Dave's looking out there as well, you could let us know which one to go for. But we're just looking at this one in the BBC, which has basically got Sheffield United at 98.4%. percent chance of relegation, then Burnley at 91.7 chance of relegation, and they've got Luton, interestingly, at 65.3% chance of relegation. Then in 17th place, they've got Forest with 38.9% chance of relegation, Everton in 16th with 3.3%, and Brentford in 15th with 1.6%. So basically, they're saying, in effect, no, absolutely no chance that we're going down at all. Now, the thing that we don't know is that, does this take into account Everton's potential other points losses, Nottingham Forest's points loss that they may or may not have? I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem to me it's taken into account Everton's potential additional points losses. It's just taken into consideration where we are at the moment now. I just think it's quite interesting that Nottingham Forest are 38.9. If you speak to any Forest fans, they don't believe that. And I think this is obviously based on Luton's form and also who they're playing over the next few weeks. But Lainey, again, looking at that, and I know we keep on saying this week in and week out, and looking at the way that we played on Saturday, you know, you've got to, if somebody said to you, take 50 quid out of your pocket, you've got to say there's no way we're going down, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. But, you know, the pessimist in me would still say, you know, we played brilliantly and still didn't win. And we've played well and lost. And, you know, although the luck that we thought was had deserted us for weeks and weeks, had done so again, you know, Mason Mount popping up in the last, well, not in the last minute, in deep into injury time. And, you know, we just looked at each other. I mean, we were just like, you know, it was just like a punch to the solar plexus, wasn't it? It was, everyone had just literally kind of, they looked traumatised. And to be fair, the players, they picked themselves up and they went up the other end and scored. And I think, you know, there wasn't that vibe in on the terraces, and I understand why. You know, it was just really dejecting. But what you just said is correct, you know, so it's an eight game run in now, and if there's loads of games tonight, we'll know a little bit more. You know, Forest are at home tonight to Fulham. Not often I want Fulham to win, but there you go. Everton go to Newcastle, and then you've got Burnley at home to Wolves, and Luton are at Arsenal tomorrow. So, you know, the points gap, you know, at the moment it's 22 points is in 18th place, which is where Luton are. And then we've got 27 points on 15. It's 5 points. Goal difference is plus 6 on them, and they've got a trip to Arsenal, which, you know, even if they play well, they're probably going to lose that one again. So if we don't add to our points tally, and nor do they, it remains 5 points with one game less. So everything's getting squeezed now. And each game, it's the probability of them catching up becomes less and less. And as you rightly say, you know, the points deduction from Everton, that's going to come in. That's going to kick in at some stage, you would imagine, which complicates it even more. So, yeah, it's the heartening thing from Saturday was the fact that, you know, we looked very, very good against one of the better teams. And you can moan, and, you know, the press have said about how bad Man United were, and yeah, they weren't great, but you've got to give us credit for making them look like that. We didn't give them a chance to settle. Some of the football we played in triangles all the way up the wing, some of the, you know, the amount of chances, the amount of shots we had, the amount of touches we had in their area, you know, that was an excellent, more than an excellent performance. And you know, we were rightly proud when the final whistle went. Relieved, proud, and yeah, it kind of just underpinned what we hoped that the team were going to do. They were going to battle every inch of the way, and, you know, we've got players still to come back into this team now, so things are looking brighter. And we've said this for weeks, Bill, you know, if we could go into that Sheffield United game on you know, on Saturday week with our full a strength team as we possibly can, with Kevin Sharder, with Ethan Pinnock, with Brian and Bumo, with Ivan Toney, we've got like more than a chance of getting 3 points against them. And we've obviously, you know, got to go to Luton, and we've got Everton away. And if we don't win those games, if we can get a point out of each of those, it just makes the gap, the light between us and them, just even bigger. So yeah, loads to be positive about, mate.
Yes, definitely loads of people. So we're going to talk about that Man United game in a little bit. It's interesting because you talked about the games that are coming up at the moment. Now we've got Forest playing the F word, Fulham, which is tonight. A very important game there as well. Interestingly, a lot of Brentford fans gunning for Fulham in that one, which is really quite bizarre as well. And like I said, you Luton also playing Arsenal on the same day that we are playing Brighton as well. So there's a lot in hand there as well. Interesting because talking about Luton, and we talked about their chance of relegation as well now. Obviously, you know, games like that Brighton game Their Arsenal game, sorry, that they're playing, very important. But also, more importantly, is a game that they're going to be playing against us in a few weeks' time. Towards the end of April, Brentford are making the trip down to Luton for the first time since we went to Luton a few years ago, where we went in, actually, I think it's during the promotion season, it was the season that we actually lost out on promotion, I think it was. Before the lockdown. And we went down to Luton and we surprisingly lost. They were doing really badly that season. And that was a complete and utter nightmare. And I remember everyone's like, oh, I'm never going to go to Luton again. But now things have, even this season when it came up, I've gone, I ain't going to go back to Luton again. But obviously the situation has now changed with Luton in the fact that they're actually doing, not particularly well, but we need to get points against them. So it's going to be a right needle of a match, probably similar to the needle of a match when we played them in the FA Cup, which was, I think it was that in 2005 when Martin Allen was manager and he completely and utterly was strutting up and down the line, winding up their fans. Like, you know, I've never seen anything like it. You know, can you imagine Thomas Frank going up and down to the Luton fans and going up to the corner and just sort of kind of sticking his chest out and just completely winding them up, and they were getting so upset with him, but he was winding them up. But also he kind of got us properly wound up for that FA Cup match. We ended up beating them 1-0. It was an absolutely brilliant day out. So I wonder if it's going to be that fearsome inside the stadium, because it was pretty bad, actually. The vibes in that stadium was just madness, like, you know. But Luton tickets went on sale at 2 o'clock today by about 2:45, I think, or 2:40. They'd sold out all the safe standing. By about 2:45, they sold out the family section. And as we're recording now, they've only got a few more restricted view tickets. So it looks like that Luton game is going to sell out within a couple of hours as well. It's going to be only season ticket holders. So if you're not a season ticket holder, it looks like it's going to be very difficult to get a ticket to that Luton match. It just goes to show you, Lainey, when a, you know, because there's been sort of question marks about away games and allocation. You know, apparently we had a reduced allocation for the Villa game. When we went to Liverpool, there were loads of Liverpool fans in the Brentford end, and it was really horrendous. You know, and there seems to be a scenario where people are picking and choosing their games to go to, which I think was predicted, you know, a couple of years ago by us. By the third season, people will be picking and choosing the games they want to go to. But this shows that this is a biggie, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's just the scarcity of the tickets. You know, it's a small stadium. It's a small away end, and it was obviously always going to be the hot ticket. So I'm not sort of looking forward to going back there. I think it's going to be a real sort of cauldron, isn't it? If assuming that they're not down already, if they're in with even a mathematical chance, which they probably will be, of escaping, then that 3 points against us, is certainly something they're going to be sort of like, you know, eyeing even this early in the month. So, yeah, it's going to be a big match, mate.
That's right. That's something to look forward to. I mean, again, it's just, we've got to look, but before that, we've got other things to take care of, because if we take care of people like Brighton and Aston Villa and Sheffield United, that for us, that Luton game becomes a little more of a kind of I don't want to say relaxed scenario, but we can go into that game with a completely different objective. So let's just see how that goes. Like you say, good luck to everybody who's trying to get tickets for that Luton game as well. Just to let you know, we've got, like I said to you, this is going to be a little bit of a mini pod, this one, as well. We make it as mini as we can do. We've also got Russell from Brighton Rock podcast as well, the Brighton Rock pod. He's going to be chatting to you about Brighton later on in this podcast, because obviously we're playing them in the midweek this week as well. We're going to try and get ourselves an Aston Villa podcast out for you in an international sense between myself and Lainey between now and the end of the week as well. Like I said to you, in the post-match podcast from that, possibly, I'm not just saying possibly, may come to you from Nashville. With the American Bees are all going to be out in Nashville for the Premier League Fan Fest out there, which I'm going to be at as well. So maybe we might do a podcast, post-match podcast with an American tinge to it. So any American Bees who you're out there, I'll definitely see you out in Nashville. I'll see you at 9 o'clock in the morning watching the game on the big screen. And also there's a drink up in the brewery on a Saturday night, which anyone who went out to America last week knows that Brentford likes to drink up in a brewery before or after a match when you're out in America. So I think there's another drink up in a brewery somewhere in Nashville, so we'll see you all out there. But anyway, listen, I'm going to probably have a cup of tea, because it's very early in the morning here. Lainey's probably going to go off and probably have a little glass of tonic water. We're going to come back and we're going to talk the Man United game. So Man United came to New Griffin Park, and it was, tell you something, it potentially could have been one of the perfect days out. For us, you know, as you know, we've got this really strange mathematical thing that we do when it comes to games. It's almost like the later the game, the earlier we try and start. So if it's a 3 o'clock game, we might meet in the pub about 12:30, 1 o'clock. But if it's a 5:30 game, we'll try and meet at maybe midday or 11 o'clock. And if it's an 8 o'clock game, I mean, we did try and see if we could meet at 10 o'clock in the morning. It didn't quite work, but we ended up down in Hammersmith with the Sevenoaks crew. You know, the Sevenoaks Cassell crew and all that crew who are down there said, meet us in Hammersmith. We're just going to go for a quiet drink down in Hammersmith. Little did we know, Laney, that there was going to be about sort of, you know, 10,000, 50,000 other people down there who were going to be going for a quiet drink as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bloody boat race, wasn't it? So it's the first time I've ever seen it, and I won't be seeing it again because what a load of rubbish that is. How boring. But yeah, it was a buzz down on the banks of the Thames. And I just wish we were a little bit closer to the Chiswick Bridge rather than the Hammersmith Bridge, because it would have been surrounded by more bees. Although there was quite a lot of Brentford there, actually. We did bump into three or four other people, didn't we? So
I think for them as well, they were like, what are you doing here? We were like a little bit like, what are you doing here? We just came here for a quick quiet drink, like, you know. There's all sorts of pims and foie gras and quail's eggs being eaten and all sorts of stuff.
You went to Oxford, didn't you? And I went to Cambridge. So we did have every right to be there. I mean, sorry, I have been to Oxford away, yeah, and you have been to Cambridge away, yeah.
That's right.
I think that's as close as we'd be to the universities.
That's right. We did go punting down the river in Cambridge, to be fair, so I think that maybe qualifies us to have at least have had our names on the list for the boat race as well. And again, the old school people down there will remember the game when we played Cambridge, nothing to do with Oxford, but yeah, we played Cambridge, final game of the season in Division 4, 1999, I think it was, the Ron Nodes years. Brilliant day out. First versus second. I think Cambridge were first. We were second. Whoever, in effect, won that game won the league. We went down to Cambridge, absolutely brought loads of fans down. Well, in those days, it seemed like loads of fans. And it was a cauldron-esque type. We all turned up there in our Cambridge gear, you know, our Ron Nodes wigs and our Cambridge suits. And we went down the river, punting and all sorts going on. The Brentford team came and walked past us at sort of like 11 o'clock in the morning. Shows how early we get down to, yeah, we can get down to Cambridge at 11 o'clock in the morning. We can't get down to Brentford at 11 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, the Brentford team went on their team walk. 11 o'clock in the morning came past us in the pub. So we went out and had a chat with them. That was really good. Really good sign. Noida Wusu dinked the ball and we scored 1-1-0 and we won the league at Cambridge, and we took it away from them, and that feeling for me is just incredible. Brilliant day out, wasn't it, Lady?
Yeah, it was. But you know, Saturday night, I think, you know, on a completely different planet.
Yeah, happy days. But like I said to you, Saturday boat race, and like I said to you, good drinks, good vibe as well from the Brentford fans. In the pub beforehand, in the pub afterwards as well, which is good. Look, quite a few bees over as well. We saw the Atlanta bee was over as well. He'd come over to go and watch away. He went to the women's game as well, but also just commenting that the atmosphere in the stadium was actually good. It's probably the best atmosphere there's been in the stadium for quite some time, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, it was. It was really special. New music to come out to. Well, not to come out to, but there's some Metallica in the build up to the teams coming out, which people have really been loving. It was. We actually had a poll. I mean, there was a bit of strange music going on actually all night. You know, Joe Dulce's "Shut Up in Your Face" was played at halftime.
That's right. It's got to be said that, you know, from what we know, that the music at halftime, the first song, is normally picked by Matthew Benham. So we can only assume that Matthew Benham chose that song. And I think the few question marks is going is, why would Matthew Benham choose that song? Because it's obviously he's not chosen it for his sort of musical values, but there must be sort of a kind of a tongue-in-cheek value. Why would he be playing "Shut Up In Your Face," do you think?
Oh, God knows. Some of his cryptic clues when we're in for new players, you can't work out who. I mean, you would assume it's a dig at someone for "Shut Up In Your Face," but it could be on anything level, on any levels.
Do you think it'd be people having a go at the team or at Thomas Frank, maybe? Do you think it could be?
Yeah, possibly that. But I mean, you know, if we'd have won and he plays it as we go off. But I mean, at the time it was 0-0, so I'm not sure
But saying that, you know, I'm not with Vardy. You know, Matthew Benham is, like, you know, you look at the stats we said, and 1.6 chance of relegation, that he's all over that. So as far as he's concerned, we're not going down. I mean, we might be kind of like more emotional about it, but in his head, he'll be just turning around and saying, look, I'm not with Vardy. I'm already planning for next season, because I know mathematically the chances of us going down are so absolutely slim. Me and my gambling world say it's not even going to happen. So for him to have played that, knowing that we're not going down, in his world, would probably make more sense.
Text him and ask him, mate. That's the only way to find out. Give him a shout, mate. But the besotted poll we put yesterday was which song on the Brentford match day anthem playlist on Saturday night was your favourite? So Metallica's Enter Sandman, which was the, you know, the real pumping heavy metal tune that boomed out around the stadium. That was the favourite. It beat Beatles, Hey Jude, narrowly. Streets, Turn the Page, which I love them coming out to, you know, in the build-up to, rather. And then Joe Dolce's Shut Up Your Face was way back in fourth with 8%. But 633 people voted, so there's put a lot of love for the Metallica, which really, that actually surprises me.
Yeah, yeah. And talking about Man United, I mean, there's always been an issue about fans in home ends, and there was a little, you know, it was flagged up that there was a bit of an issue with fans in home ends at this Manchester United game.
Fans in home ends, that's Fulham, right, mate.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. You know, we're talking about sort of sponge cakes in home ends at Fulham, and swimming pools as well. Apparently Fulham are looking at building a swimming pool in their posh stand, like, you know, the Riverside stand. And I thought that was a bit of a joke, and we all thought it was an April Fool's joke, but no, it's not. It's actually really true. And my cousin actually started to work at Fulham. I mean, I stopped talking to him for a small period of time, but to be fair, he's only young and he's only been working there for about a week, and I talked to him about it. He's like, yes, it's one of the things that they're actually discussing, and he might actually be put in charge of actually trying to flog, you know, spaces, like, you know, towel space on that by the swimming pool while they're playing football, like, you know what I'm saying. But yeah, they're actually trying to build
you can fill that up with all the Man United fans that were in our end.
Well, this is what I was saying. So talking about fans and flans in your end, there's a clip that showed when Man United scored in 90+4, and obviously they scored towards the east stand, and when the goal was scored, literally loads of people got up and started cheering in the east stand. Now I know there's lots of talk about tickets and selling on tickets of the club dealing with situations like that, but it did actually kind of highlight the issue kind of was really quite bad as well, because not only were they there, but they had the audacity to kind of like not sit on their hands, as they say, almost like they could think that we can just get away and just do what we want as well. Now obviously there must have been fans and plans in other parts of the ground, which, you know, we may or may not know about, but this was very, very obvious. And I think there's been a few people, you know, GPG, the bias of sort of flagging it up, trying to work out with the club, you know, how they're going to deal with this, because it is a bit of an issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive issue, actually. Yeah, it's, you know, there's always away fans in the home sections at every ground, everywhere in the Premier League, and probably every single ground up and down the country, especially when they become scarce. Now, you know, at a stadium like ours, the only two ways of getting a ticket is if you're a season ticket holder or if you're a member. And being a member is actually, it's not difficult as such, but you've got to have, you know, a purchasing history to become a member. So it should be easy for the club to work out who owns those seats in brackets, whose right it is to sit there. So whether they are a season ticket holder that has been flogging their season ticket on, like, you know, touting it, or they're giving it to mates who are acting like that, I think it's probably the former rather than the latter, or they're people that have bought, you know, or away fans that are on the membership list. Now, whichever the case is, it should be easy for the, you know, looking at the footage to work out which seats are the ones which had, you know, fans in that are jumping up and down, and then you deal with that. If it's a season ticket holder, then you you have to take us further, I'm afraid. You know, some people go, what's the big deal? It is a big deal. Visually it looks awful. There's always Brentford fans saying how difficult it is for them to get tickets, but you know, if an away fan can get it, then a home fan can get one, you would have thought. But that's an aside. You know, we can't be having that repeated too often, because you know, sometimes it's the club's fault, sometimes it's not the club's fault. But once you've got a demonstration of something like that, then the club can act on it, and personally I expect them to, and to do so quite hard, to be honest, because you know, it's bringing other Brentford fans into disrespect and disrepute, I think. It's something that the club can do something about, and I'm expecting them to do something about. What do you think, Bill?
I think 100%, and it's obviously going to be fairly easy to track down. I mean, they seem to be able to sort of track down other things and sort of clamping down on other things, which, to be quite honest with you, there's an argument that people might say when it comes to ticketing wise, there's probably a lot less, not offensive, but you know, it's almost like they need to concentrate their efforts in other areas. And for me, it's like, you know, this is an area that they probably need to concentrate their efforts on. Not saying that they're not, because obviously they're trying to do certain things, but it's kind of like this situation here has really flagged up. And obviously the Man United game, we could tell, you know, we've got our characters that we've got. We've got, you know, we've got a ring. We've got people that are kind of always sort of buying and selling tickets between themselves, all face value, it has to be said, between Brentford fans as well. Some people, you know, my mum can't go. My kids can't go. We've got a ticket spare. And then after, there's a little bit of a kind of thing going on. So you can get a feel. And the Man United game has definitely been the hottest ticket so far. This is the one where lots and lots of people were saying, any tickets going, I'd like to have tickets. So you knew that the demand was going to be there. Now, interestingly, the cheering came from the East Stand. And, you know, I don't know much about the East Stand. It's one of the ends that I've never actually sat in, the East Stand. But I know people who I've known from Griffin Park that stands in the North Stand. I know people obviously in the West Stand, you know, and I also know people that used to, you know, even stand the Ealing Road, who go to the South Stand. I actually don't know anybody that goes to the East Stand. I know that they put a lot of the international fans, and you know, we're very happy for them to come over, into the East Stand as well. And I could probably only presume that maybe a lot of the season tickets, but the tickets that are bought by the members probably are in the East Stand. I might be wrong, but that's what my feeling may be. Now, not saying, you know, and there's an argument about who's a better fan and who's a more loyal fan. Forget all this kind of business. But maybe some of these fans who get those tickets are probably slightly more transient than the ones who are, say, for example, in the East Stand, or the West Stand, or the North Stand. And maybe some of those people, you know, with this access, having a ticket probably means not as much to them as it might be other people. So for them to actually let it on and let it go, maybe they support another team or something like that, and they've managed to get the membership years ago, and they built things enough for them to get tickets for these games. And so for them to go, and if somebody offers them £100 for a ticket, they're quite happy to let that go. Whereas in the West End, you offer somebody £100 for a Man United ticket, they still won't let it go. A, financially, and B, for, you know, just for moral reasons, they won't do that. But maybe people haven't got that moral compass who have bought these tickets. Does that make sense, Laney?
Well, I think that area of the ground is the one that they sell last. I think that's the kind of like, you know, if we don't sell out, and there's load of, you know, there's empty seats, and the away allocation expands, I think that's where it expands into. That's what they did. They have done that a couple of times. I think if that is going to happen, if we are going to get members, like away fans who are on our membership list, if it's going to happen anywhere in the ground, it's going to happen there in more visible numbers. It's the area they're going to have to kind of, you know, as I said, they're going to have to come up with a way of scrutinising people just a bit more, or get stewards to be, you know, really vigilant in those areas and turf people out. I mean, the problem is it's going to lead to trouble at some stage. You know, you can say, oh, what's the harm? Some people, I'm not saying most people listening to this could see the harm. Other people will say, well, what's the harm if we haven't sold them, and that they've gone there and people are behaving, and you know what? But that's kind of what we saw on Saturday with people going up and you know, celebrating, it is going to lead to crowd issues.
And again, it's manners. It's a manners thing, isn't it?
It's manners, yeah. But if that, you know, if that happens in the West End, there's a completely different outcome. You know, we'd have to go into what the outcome would be, but it wouldn't have ended as peacefully as it did on the whole.
And the thing is, and I'm going to say this as well, Laney, the thing is that, you know, we know, and everyone out there, you can't say that you don't know. We know that, you know, you do get opposition fans in the home end. You know, people may invite their friends, right, as part of they're coming along. But the manners, for example, they might be a good mate for 20. I've seen it. People who've been going for years, oh, he's a mate of mine. I've known him for 35 years, and they brought them along. They're inside the home end, but they stand up. They have a beer with you. They have a chat with you. They sit on their hands. They don't say anything. They don't make any noise, and they're kind of there. And they even stand up, and you can see them sort of kind of singing, just kind of getting involved. And that's kind of the manners side of things that you kind of see, because that's a kind of, as a football thing. It's like when you go to a pub and you've got the home and away fans chatting with each other. Yes, that is going to happen, and you can't pretend it's not going to happen. Because that is going to happen. What we're talking about is people coming in who are kind of alien. They're in on their own. They know that they're opposition fans, and what they're doing is that they kind of try to make their presence felt, that they're opposition fans in the home area, which if can cause friction, in it.
Yeah, it's going to cause more than that. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think they were standing up and singing. You know, I didn't hear that. I think it would have, you know, kicked off, for want of a better word, if they were, you know, singing all the songs that the away section was in our home end. I think it just because of the, you know, the goal at that time of the game. If you're ever going to be able to not control your reactions, it's then, you know, if you think you've won in the death again, which Man United seem to have done quite regularly recently, especially against us and the FA Cup game, then that's what you get. But to conclude it, really, it's the club have to be seen to be doing stuff about this, because I don't mean to be seen to be doing stuff. I mean, like, that they have to do something about this, because it isn't going to end well, and it causes a lot of bad feeling their way as well. You know, there's a lot of fans accusing them of not caring about this. There's a lot of fans accusing them of making it too easy for away fans, but making it hard for some of our own. You know, whether that's right or wrong, the club are actually gonna, you know, they're making a lot of fans very, very unhappy because of the situation, and I think they owe it to a lot of people to sort it out.
Yeah, so Laney, I mean, I heard also there was a Man United fan who was very obvious Man United fan in the South Stand as well. I found out that apparently Stormzy was in the boardroom as well.
I didn't see that.
So Man United, as you probably know, Stormzy is a Manchester United fan. I don't know. I mean, maybe we might get reports back. Did when Man United scored at the last minute, did you think that Stormzy celebrated? And do you think that Stormzy should have been actually thrown out of the ground?
Yeah, he should have been thrown out. Yeah,
right. let's just throw him out, mate. Just get rid. Stormzy, you've got to go, mate. Stormzy, red card as you go. But anyway, listen, tell you what we're going to do. I mean, we forget about Stormzy, forget about the Man United fans who had no manners as well. We're going to hear from the Brentford fans after the game, who are talking about that magnificent draw.
Fantastic game. Before the match, I would have taken a point and a decent performance. We got a point and a fantastic performance. We hit their woodwork four times. We had a goal disallowed for marginal offside. Amazing performance. We were just like took the game to them throughout, and we were just magnificent. Flecken pulled off one brilliant save, and that's all he had to do, really. Anything else was like easy meat for him. We just created chance after chance. Every single player on that pitch for us was magnificent. I mean, Yarmouk looked brilliant. You know, Vozlev, you know, everyone, which is fantastic. That was just like such a brilliant, brilliant performance. How they got that goal, that jammy fucking goal in injury time, just really gutted me. But to come back and get that equaliser, it's absolutely brilliant. We deserved it big time.
If a Martian was to have landed tonight and said which team is higher in the league, they would have thought Brentford were the ones that were going for the Champions League spots, or at least European spots. And Man United were the ones that were likely to be relegated. We're not going to go down. Manchester United, though, if I were a United fan, they have got some serious, serious problems.
United are really lucky to have got out here without being battered, to be honest. I mean, the woodwork saved them so many times. Another day we could have had three or four quite easily. When they scored, it was just sort of like, it would have been such an injustice if they'd walked away with all 3 points. Fair play, we came back, we got that goal. Brilliant work for the goal. Brilliant work, you know. Yes, it would have been great to get all 3 points, but if you can't win, then don't lose. We didn't lose that point. Again, it could be another crucial point.
That was an absolute solid 10 out of 10 performance from the boys today. It was men against boys out there. You have to be here to really see that in action, but the body language of our players versus theirs was just, I mean, there's absolutely no match. It does feel gutting to have dropped those 2 points. As you said, a draw is still a point. And when you're performing like that, the fans aren't worried, the players aren't worried, Thomas Frank isn't worried. We've got absolute confidence that we'll be absolutely fine this season. The tension in this place there was palpable. For it to be goalless for so long, it built up and built up and built up, and I think they were just lucky to get on the end of it. If we'd have scored first, ain't no way they were ever going to equalise. It's just the way that happened, because we had the passion and the desire for that equaliser. That's the only reason that ended up 1-1.
Point. I'm absolutely gutted we didn't take 3 points today. When United score on the 94th minute or whatever, you think, oh, not again. We were at Old Trafford winning 1-0. They score another late goal, thinking, not again. And then what, 2-3 minutes later? And you look at the team that we put out and we're thinking, oh, Zanka, Ajay, Collins, dodgy back, three. But they were outstanding.
They're up for it, mate.
Absolutely outstanding.
And I'll tell you what, Man United lived a charmed life today.
Yeah.
How they scored that goal, it's beyond me, because we absolutely pummeled them. I just looked on Sky Sports News, and bearing in mind, as you said earlier on, that Man United scored first, it says Man United nick a draw, and that is what it was. They nicked that. Yeah. You know, that's our Easter present to them, that's for sure.
I've got a raving headache through it. But they played so well, and I felt that we should have won that game. I think Man U thought that, as I said with previous games, that they were going to thrash us, and they didn't. And the whole team, I'm proud of them. The game was spectacular.
I think if you look at it, this could have been another 4-0 win at home to Man United. We have to make those chances count. We've just got to put them away. I think sometimes we're taking 3, 4, 5 more touches than we need to. And I think sometimes we've just got to have a look up and have a strike.
We pissed all over them, and it would have been really bloody disappointing to not get anything out of that game, I tell you. They were so on top today, Brentford, and just willing that ball in when that offside goal went in. I thought, is that it? And it's just nice to shut up the Man United fans in the away end. And it's good to score that. Probably need a win against Brighton, I reckon.
So, you see the fans enthusing about that match. It tells you something, it was a brilliant game. And interestingly, people are talking about it. I started to look, how many Sky games have you recorded and not watch them back? I actually started to watch this one back, and you could hear the commentators enthusing about Brentford, and just basically saying that, you know, even, you know, we play, you know, Thomas Frank said it, the game that we beat them 4-0, we probably played better in this game, just didn't get the goals. If we got that first goal that Ivan Toney shot against the post, relatively early on, if that had gone in, it could have been an absolute kind of goal fest, you know. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you don't quite get the rub of the green, you know, the amount of chances that we had. I mean, XG wise, and then we talked about the XG a lot on this show, XG wise, 3.29 to the Bees and 0.59 to Manchester United. I mean, if you look at the chart, and I was looking at the chart, Manchester United had probably about 3 1 out of 10 shots. So basically, the shots that won, if you take it 10 times, they would have scored one goal out of them 10, and the other 9 wouldn't have happened. And those were within the sort of 6 to 8 yard kind of area, including the goal that they scored. So they had about 3 of those, and those were their biggest chances. Okay. But other than that, not being funny, their chances were few and far between. That's why their XG was, you know, 0.59 compared.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
To Brentford 3.2 now. Now I looked at the shot chart and it is completely and utterly, it was so clogged I had to sort of try and put my cursor in there to try and pick out particular ones. And you had, you know, a couple of KLP chances which were sort of 1 in 3, about 30, just over 30%. So you had a couple of them chances as well. And also there's an Ivan Toney chance as well which he didn't score, which is about, like I said to you, the one I think that we talked about, which is just about 30% chance as well. And other than that, we had a number of other chances as well. I can't go into 100%, but it just goes to show you how dominant we are in that game. Just doing sort of traditional stats, because some people like the traditional stats, and I think we got 31 shots to their 11, which has to show you 13 in open play to 10 in open play as well, 16 set pieces to 1 set piece as well. And looking at the players, you know, the top players, interestingly, Yenelt for WhoScored.com top was 7.8, then Jensen 7.8 as well, then we had Christopher Ayo was 7.6, Bruno Fernandes, never heard of him, 7.6, and he's Zanka was right up there at 7.5, which is interesting because Zanka's been getting quite a lot of grief for his sort of defending activities, but he got proper plaudits, you know, with the 7.5. And just talking about man of the match as well, the sort of global man of the match does by the Tasmanian Bee, who'll be here very soon. Yanelt, man of the match, top of the pile there, with Yarmolek second and Ayaya being third as well. And an honourable mention going to Visa as well. That was Yanelt's second man of the match performance. And the seventh player to win it on 2 or more occasions, also his third top three performance in a row. And Yarmolek is his first top three effort, and he was the 23rd player to finish in the top three, which just goes to show what season we've been having. So, Laney, I mean, you know, that just kind of gives an idea of how dominant we were in that game, innit?
Yeah, and, you know, that XG figure of 3.29 on another day, that could get you 7 goals, you know, or there's... It just shows you how many really great chances that we carved out. And, you know, you go through our team and there's an argument for, not for the man of the match, but, hold on, excuse me, yeah. Not necessarily for the man of the match, but everyone stood out there, you know. Flecken, what a great save, you know. He got that, his arm in the way and it went over. I think it might have been offside anyway, but he didn't know that when he did that. You know, Ayer again is coming on leaps and bounds. Second goal in 2 games. Nathan Collins looks solid. Zanka, yeah, you know, you're right to say that, you know, he's question marks about him sometimes. But and we know that we can, you know, we know that in an ideal world we've gone into the transfer market and replaced him. But, you know, what we've got was outstanding on the night. KLP, what a game. You know, I've personally given him a fair amount of grief, and, you know, he had a super game. And then, you know, all the way through, you know, and then obviously, this, you know, Yarmolek, I got a lot of pleasure out of watching him, because he's, you know, he's a player that we've kind of watched, not gloom, but he's starting to do that. There was a brilliant documentary about him the club put out in the week, and it was just like, you know, he capped that off with a great performance. And then obviously up front, Wiese and Toney, they look great. Wiese, he could have scored a couple on another night. And then you've got Brian and Boomer that came on later on. And everywhere there was positive performances. And it was just such a shame we couldn't take 3 points, because we so, so deserved it, mate.
Yeah. And again, just going back to it, the total shots again, the top 5 total shots were all Brentford. Ivan Toney had 9 shots in that game. Keane Lewis-Potter had 6 shots in that game. Johan Wiese had 4 shots. Zanka, right, centre-back, you know, or substitute, you know, sort of second-string centre-back player, had 3 shots in that game. And Yenelt also had 3 shots in that game. So, again, like I said, it shows you kind of like, you know, how dominant we are in that game. Just having a look at, you know, the strengths and weaknesses, according to Who Scored, Brentford created a high number of chances relative to our possession, and also goal-scoring opportunities through individual skill and also through long shot situations. We were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from counter-attacks, and we were creating goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces. where our weaknesses were, we were poor at finishing. Manchester United, they had no significant strengths. They gave the ball away a lot at free kicks around the box as well. So that kind of, I get it. I think it probably tells you what we already knew there as well. Like, you know, we had a large quantity of possession in their half. We attacked through the middle. We had a high shot frequency when in possession. We favoured crossing the ball. We favoured through balls. Man United favoured long balls and attacking down the left-hand side. So very, very dominant performance from the Bees. Look, anything else that you want to talk about that Man United game? I mean, like I said to you, we talked about quite a lot of the players who we felt have done really well. Yanel, you know, in the absence of Norgaard. Norgaard's injured, and when Norgaard's out, we have the fear. You know, we absolutely have the fear because we think, you know, if Norgaard has a great game, Breeze have a great game. If he's not playing a lot of the time, we do struggle. But Yanalt, oh my God, you know, what an absolutely ridiculously brilliant game that he had, didn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, you look at those stats. I mean, they edged it in possession and they edged it in passing, but they just obviously they were kind of stuck in the middle and they couldn't provide any link up between, you know, but I thought Fernandes, I thought he had a good game. He was everywhere, you know, he was involved in everything. He wasn't necessarily at his best, but, you know, there was nothing going on in the top part of the pitch. And it looked like that we were able to let them get the ball and they just intimidate them and get tackles in and, you know, break down their possession and counter attack. We got our tactics so spot on, you know. And unfortunately, it's just that shows you can put that performance in and you get 1 point. And we have to do that again tomorrow, and we have to get at least 1 point, if not three, against Brighton, who are going to watch us. They're a savvy team. If anyone thinks it's going to be a walk in the park tomorrow, they're wrong. So it's going to be another big night with GTEC, and you know I'm positive now that we can sort of get some sort of consistency in now. I'm not saying there's no pressure on us, but we can play with a little bit more of a swagger because we've got the players coming back into the team that allow us to be a bit more expansive. So often in the last couple of months, we're literally just cobbled together a team, you know, and you just send them out and you just hope for the best. Now, if Thomas Frank's able to sort of put, you know, some structure and implement a real game plan. We've done all right in some games, but, you know, I don't think we could have probably expected much more from others. So, you know, now at long last, we're getting towards a situation where we've got our better players available, and, you know, it shows you what a good team when that's the case.
Yeah, and talking about players available again, I mean, like, you know, we had after the last game where Brian Abumo came on as a sub, we were quite excited. You know, everyone's just that we're in the pub beforehand, as you do after the buzz race had finished. By the way, come on, Oxford, and we were saying Brian Abumo is definitely going to start. He's definitely going to start, but he didn't start. Obviously, maybe they're just managing his injury, not trying to get him to come back too soon, but make him have a little bit of an impact. As yourself and myself, we said that we would have. I mean, for me, I was quite happy for Boomer to come back for the Sheffield United game and actually just smash him to pieces for that one, because, you know, and make sure that he doesn't get injured too early. You know, doesn't come back too early and get injured. But, you know, they're obviously happy with putting him in earlier, but just giving him a little bit of time here and there. So he got about 20 minutes yet again against Manchester United, but also when he came on, you could also see what he brought. I mean, all of a sudden his driving runs, I mean, it was almost like when he came on, they were like pinned back even more, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they know how to manage him. I think he probably will start. I mean, Thomas Frank yesterday suggested that he's ready to start. And if he's ready to start, you would, because we're a much better team with him in it. And he also mentioned yesterday that Kevin Schaarder plays a practice game today. He won't be in contention for the match against Brighton on Wednesday night, but he will be in contention for the trip to Aston Villa on Saturday. So, you know, another option there, more pace, another person for the teams to worry about. You know, it seems a long time ago now that he scored that incredible goal. It showed you that what he was capable of, and you know, it'd be great to see him back in contention, seeing him back on the bench and just giving us options, because you know, it's so important.
Yeah, yeah. And just a final question on that and Mbeumo. I suppose this is a real sort of kind of, it's easy to say this after the event, but do you think, you know, the fact that Brian Mbeumo only plays, you know, he only wants him to play 20 minutes. I know it's very rare for a manager to play a player for 20 minutes and take him off, but do you think it may have been kind of, maybe might have been a move for him to actually have started with Brian Mbeumo? He said, I'm only going to give you 20 minutes. I want you to go and smash up Man United, like, in the first 20 minutes, and then we'll bring on Wiesa after, because Wiesa's been brilliant, you know what I'm saying? And just do it the other way around. So he goes on, does his driving runs, and he scores a goal or hits a post, does whatever. Then after that, they're so kind of dishevelled, you know, and Wiesa comes on and just kind of finishes them off. Do you think, in retrospect, that could have been a move?
Yeah, well, it's always one or the other. If he's not ready for the 90 minutes, do you start them or do you finish them? It's just kind of a bit of an age-old kind of quandary, isn't it? Where you don't know whether to come, you know, to go hell for leather in the first 20.
But the thing I'd say that normally, if you start them, you take them off after half time, maybe after even 60 minutes or 55 minutes, or give them a half. The idea of taking them off after 20 minutes is, you know, you only normally do that if the player's injured, though, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. That seems it's always the way it happens, isn't it? It's like we'll give them 20 minutes, and it's always towards the end, isn't it? It really is. And I think that's when you're playing against tired legs, so you can come on and, you know, you might be able to kind of, like, you know, match the fitness levels a little bit easier. But yeah, I'm expecting him to start against Brighton. I think, you know, those two were kind of not in cotton wool. I mean, coming on, there was a kind of a big burden on him to make an impact up at Burnley, and you know, to go on and kind of win it for us against Man United. I guess that was the G up, and he hit the bar. He's reacquainted himself with the woodwork. He didn't take long to do that. But you know, we just, as I keep saying, he's such an important player to us, that to have him back is a big shot in the arm.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just looking back at this as well, you know, the weakness that whoscored.com did say that we had, the only weakness was we were poor at finishing. And I suppose that kind of really sums it up. Some people might say unlucky. Some people say, you know, if that was another team or another striker, or even Man United, if they had the opportunities that we had, maybe they may have done better with it. But like I said to you, it may spin over time, you know. And like I said to you, we don't score that game, but another game we score a plethora of goals. But anyway, what else could I say about this game? I don't think there's anything else really to say about this game. We've actually waxed lyrical.
No, it's nice to get it out of the way, to be honest. Yeah, yeah. It was a pressure cooker of a game. You know, after going to Burnley, it was and losing. It was important that we got a point, at least a point, and yeah, we did that. But it could have been so much better.
That's right. Okay. So anyway, listen, we're going to go away. We're going to talk about the Brighton after we come back, and because that's a big game, and they're coming down to us on Wednesday night at New Griffin Park. So Wednesday night, Brighton, underneath the lights. It's half term, so there'll be a lot of kids down there. They're off school. It's not a problem about them going to school the following day, so it should be quite lively down there on the Wednesday night against Brighton. Brighton are going to be coming up. They've had a bit of a funny season, Brighton, actually, because obviously they did very well last season. I spoke on BBC Radio 5 Live, the Monday Night Club, the other day, a couple of weeks ago as well, and they were basically saying, you know, come on, Bill, you know, Brentford in all sorts of problems at the moment now, why don't you admit it, kind of thing. And I was saying, well, no. I said that as far as I'm concerned, yes, of course, we're having problems in, you know, not winning matches, but we've got a lot of injuries. But I said, but you look at where we are at the moment, okay? You look at where we are as a club at the moment. It's our third season in the Premier League, right? The first season we finished 13th, the second season we finished 9th, and now at the moment now, we still haven't dipped into the relegation zone with all these injuries, but, you know, we're still kind of around about 15th, 16th, 14th, 15th, 16th, right, in the league. Brighton, they spent their first 3 seasons struggling with relegation, if I remember rightly. They finished 17th, you know, 16th. They finished all around that in their first 3 seasons. I think it took them 5 seasons before they actually finished in 9th place. right, similar to where we finished. So what I'm saying is that we're ahead of the curve, if you want to compare us to them. And everyone's waxing lyrical about Brighton at the moment now, saying what fantastic football we play, how clever they are at the recruitment, how clever they are at doing this, that, the other. But what they did is that they just stayed in the league, took the 150 million each year and just got better and just found players that they could buy, you know, left field players like what we do, but it's taken them a bit of time. So no one remembers Brighton being the strugglers at the time. We were in the Championship at the time, we didn't even notice it so much, but you know, they were struggling for their first three or four seasons in the Premier League. So, you know, for us to kind of be there or thereabouts with them at the moment now, you know, we're doing all right, isn't it, lady?
Yeah, I'm doing more than all right. You know, it's just, you know, we just need to get this season over and done with, regroup, improve in one or two areas, and you know, I think we'll be competing with them next season. I think they, you know, they started off the season like a house on fire, they were near the top, and you know, it's an exceptional story what's going on down on the South Coast. And you know, there's a rivalry between owners, but as a fan, they've been in the same divisions as us for always. You know, we've always, you know, supported them through their, you know, their wilderness years where they had to leave the Goulston ground, and they played at Gillingham, and they played all over the place, and they played at, you know, with Dean. And now they've got this, you know, that shiny new stadium, and we, you know, like it or loathe it, because it's, you need to get a train to get there or whatever, but the story is an incredible one, and especially the last few seasons where they've been spending, you know, it's been selling players for £100 million plus, and you know, rinsing Chelsea right out, and it's inspiration to clubs of our size. They are a similar size club. They're probably a bit bigger than us. They are a one city team. They've got a bigger catchment area, and you know, you can target you know, a city wide campaign to get schools and kids and all kinds of people involved. Very much different to us. You know, it's more scattergun. We're surrounded by competition, and we've been trying to compete against teams that have been in the Premier League for a lot longer than us. So what Brighton have achieved is, as I said, an inspiration, and I want them to do well, because if clubs like them can, they, clubs like Brighton can do well, clubs like Brentford can do well. So I'm looking forward to playing them again. The games against them haven't been particularly great the last few years. Well, we did the double over them, but the games themselves have been quite edgy. And then down at the Amex earlier on this season, before Christmas, it was a really frustrating one. They won, we went a goal up, Brian and Bumo scored a penalty, and then they came back and won it 2-1, and then Bumo got injured badly. So it was a bittersweet night, to be honest with you. And you know, I think we owe them, because I thought we deserved something that night, and we got nothing. Plus, we got a really crocked, brilliant player. And their season's not petering out. They've still got a chance of qualifying for Europe again. They're only a couple of points outside Europe, and they're only 6 points behind Manchester United. Who are pushing themselves for a Champions League place. So it's there's a lot to play for. So they will be coming to the GTEC trying to win. But you know, if we can raise those levels like we did on Saturday night, we've got every chance of taking 3 points off them, mate.
That's right. So I mean, we know a bit about Brighton. We know the history of Brighton. We played them so many times. Like I said to you, from the Goldstone Ground. You know, in Hove, which is now flats there, all to the Withdean, like I said, to the new stadium, and like I said, to a few times at New Griffin. But I'm very, very glad that Trossard isn't at Brighton anymore, because he used to score against us, it seemed, all the time. But we need to know a little bit more about Brighton. I mean, because they've had a great season last season, they got to Europe this season. They had a bit of a run in Europe as well this season, and then but it seems to have affected their league form to a certain extent, which is something, like I said, that we had a little bit of fear about. We're not having the strength and depth, but we're going to go over to Russell from the Brighton Rock podcast. He's going to give us the lowdown on Brighton.
Hello to Billy, hello to Lainey, and hello to everyone else at Besotted. This is Russell Guyver, founder and co-host of the Brighton Rock podcast, a podcast about the Albion, a fancast. It's been going for 4.25 years, and we've been loving life. It's been a good time to be talking about the Albion, because I've been a fan since 79-80, and the first four seasons were top flight. our first four seasons in the top flight. And it's gone full circle for us because the last few years, the last 7 years, in fact, we've been in the top flight again. And we've been loving life. We've had our ups, we've had our downs. But without any shadow of a doubt, we are talking about ups at the moment. We were gutted to lose Graham Potter. We loved his brand of football. We were playing a good passing game anyway. He upped the ante in that regard. And it was only really in the final third, with a lack of scoring the goals that our XG should have demanded, that we didn't quite fulfil our objectives and our ambitions. However, he seemed to be cracking it early last season in the first few games, as we nearly went top of the table, as we had done the previous year with Graham. Only for him to get poached and all of the backroom team, to the fury, anger and disappointment of all Albion fans as he went to Chelsea. We feel the world might cave in, but we have succession planning under Tony Bloom, one of the most fantastically and successfully run clubs in the country. We're proud and delighted to be able to say that. Tony always has a succession plan for any key staff. Vertically, looking through the whole of the club, there's always plans in place. Have no fear, because we had a backup. We had Roberto Di Zerbi waiting in the wings. He was our first choice. He was not currently employed at the time because he'd just finished with Shakhtar Donetsk, of course, due to the Ukraine war situation, which was very unfortunate in general circumstance, but fortunate for us in terms of timing. Because he was first choice, there was no compensation to pay out. We got him in, he was happy to join, and we have hit the ground running. A 3-3 draw at Anfield, the place where we've most recently played a match as we speak now. His first game is a 3-3 draw, and it's a summary of the kind of football that we've played ever since. High entertainment, high octane, high tempo, attacking football, gung-ho football. The one downside, of course, is that we do tend to concede more goals than we did under Graham or under Chris Hughton before him. However, we wouldn't have it any other way, because it's a fantastic brand of football. It's so entertaining to watch. Roberto came in last September. He's had the best part of two seasons with us now, and they have been a joy and a delight. Not only because last season he made history and will be an indelible legend etched into our history, because he got us our highest ever finish in the top flight, sixth place, which of course meant not only Europe, but the Europa League rather than the Conference League as well, which we were particularly thrilled about. And we have had a bundle of fun going, as you can imagine, around Europe. I could only get to two of the games away from home, Ajax and Roma, but loved the trips. Fantastic experience, and I really hope you guys get to have that experience yourselves one day fairly soon, as long as it's not at our expense. But anyway, yeah, superb. Sixth place last season, playing a brilliant brand of football, thrashing Chelsea soon after they'd nabbed our manager 4-1, and it should have been 8-1, was the highlight of my time ever going to the Amex. We've had a 3-0 win over Liverpool in the Cup last year. We thrashed Man United in recent years 4-0 as well. We've had some great times, but probably none more so than that Chelsea game. However, I think when we beat Manchester United to confirm that European place, what an atmosphere that was. And the European games, the European nights, home and away, have been an absolute thrill and a roller coaster ride as well. In terms of this season, obviously it's been a bit more of a challenge. Taking out the European excitement side of things, obviously that's a much heavier workload of games. And as with a lot of other sides, and we don't need to tell you guys about injuries. I know you and Newcastle have had as many, if not more than we have, ridiculous numbers of injuries. Unfortunately, that has really hindered our season. I think we could and would have gone further in the tournament, the Europa League, and certainly the FA Cup, which we got to the fifth round in, and higher in the table, if it wasn't for the sheer quantity and severity of the injuries we've had. Every single key player we seem to have had coming into form has been injured. Local boy Solly March right at the beginning of the season. Julio Enciso right at the beginning of the season, who's only just coming back into the equation now. Joao Pedro, Billy Gilmore, the latest one, who's picked up a knee injury which might keep him out for the rest of the campaign. Young Jack Hinchelwood, the bonus ball, a fourth generation of the same family to all play top flight football, which is a record in English football. He came into his own. He was the bonus, but he got injured. Mittema's been injured. Ferguson's been injured and has been ill, we think, with glandular fever. So all sorts of players that could have had an influence on our season have not been able to do so due to injuries. It's been a highly frustrating campaign. We've had a minimum, I think I'm right in saying, of six or seven injuries, key injuries, this is, first team, first choice regulars, if they were available, have been out all the way through the campaign. And given the extra matches we've had to play as well, that has been a huge strain on resources and on our ability to really shine. We haven't been able to pick the right players for the right games, and we haven't been able to rest players enough. However, despite all that, we've had fun. We've got to the knockout stages of Europa League, having won our group. We beat every team we played at least once. We got a minor bit of revenge on Roma in the return leg of the game, which saw us leave the competition. And we've had, as I said, a run to the fifth round of the FA Cup. We've still had some great days, and we're looking forward to more of those. We have stayed in the top half of the table all season, despite all of those issues. And that, I think, is an understated achievement. I don't think the media are giving us enough credit for that, especially given the fact that they don't give us credit for the number of people we've had injured. And that hasn't seemed to have been acknowledged, which is a source of much frustration to us. I know you would suffer similar bias against in the media as well. And certainly you guys have had a tough season, haven't you? Ivan Toney missing, of course, for a sizable chunk until January, and a load of other injuries have hampered your season, and that's been telling as well. In terms of this season's campaign, of course, we had the 2-1 win at the Amex against you guys. Billy Gilmore, our most recent injury victim, was man of the match on that occasion. The other players that shone were Evan Ferguson, who's not been on form since he's come back from injury, Pascal Grosch, who will be playing and is our undoubted our finest ever signing, signed for peanuts. He's been with us the whole way through the campaign. He is the second highest assist holder in the Premier League since he joined us in our first campaign to 2017-18 season, behind Kevin De Bruyne. And he is joint top for assists this season. He's second, I think, also for chances created. He is understated. He's finally got his chance in the Germany squad, and long overdue and well-deserved, I have to say. He will be one of the keys in this match. If we are going to shine, we need him to be delivering balls into the box and through balls down the middle to try and carve you open. It's going to be a tough one. We are pretty strong at home. We mentioned we played you with a 2-1 win in December. But unfortunately, we haven't won as many games as we should have done. That's where our issue has been at home. The bigger issue has been away from home, where literally, even more so than at home, anything goes with the Roberto De Zerbi match. We've been thrashed 6-1 at Villa, albeit a couple of those goals shouldn't have stood. And we got thrashed 4-0 at Luton, where we went 2-0 down in 3 minutes. Those are the kind of performances we are capable of creating, you'd be delighted to know. However, we're also capable of beating the best, even on their own patch. We've been unbeaten in 4 games against Liverpool until the weekend match, for example. But it's a tricky one. It's been a mixed bag, hasn't it, really, between games between our two sides, and in particular at your place. I think Toney has been a big difference in some of those games at your ground, and I think he scored against us. We do fear him. He is the main threat, without any shadow of a doubt, as far as we're concerned. He is a proper world-class striker. He is that good. One of the best in the world, certainly one of the best in the Premier League, and capable of anything. He's strong, he's wily, he's canny, he's physical, he can head it, he's got a bit of pace about him, and of course he is deadly from the spot on top of all of that. Our man, João Pedro, also deadly from the spot, who thankfully has been able to replace the penalty taking of Alexis McAllister from last season, one of two big losses to our squad, Caicedo being the other. João is a deadly penalty taker, but he's been injured. The latest one on form, then injured. He is apparently going to be available for selection for the squad for the game. It doesn't sound like he's going to play the whole match, and I'm not sure if he'll start or not, but he can be an influence maker for us. You can watch out for Van Hecker at the back, who's a sublime defender, absolutely supreme. Lewis Dunk has been on very ropey form, ironically, for us. I say ironically because this is when he's been called up finally and acknowledged by Gareth Southgate. It seems a bit late in the day. It's come 2 or 3 seasons too late, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's probably in the poorest form of his Premier League stage of his career with us. So I think that's one weakness we've had. He is capable of a good game. He's played well in a couple of the recent matches, but that's one weakness. Where we are looking to have a threat is João, if he can get on. Danny Welbeck blows hot and cold, but if he's on his game, he can be a threat. Pascal Gross, as I've mentioned, and our man Simon Adingra, the African Cup of Nations champion with Ivory Coast, is a threat down the left wing. I'm not sure how strong a team you're going to put out. If Ivan Toney's around, it's certainly going to be strong enough to worry us. We're going to see how it goes. But I'm predicting a tight match. as these ones usually are, and I think it is going to be a 2-2 draw. I am notoriously bad at getting score predictions right, so don't take anything from that. In fact, predict anything other than 2-2 if you're putting any bets on. That's it from me. Thank you very much, Billy, for letting me have a bit of airtime to tell you about how our season's going. I know you guys have had a tough one, and I think you'll be fine this season. And I really like Thomas Frank, and I wish him all the best after this midweek game. Until then, you bees, and up the Albion.
There you go, Russ from the Brighton Rock podcast. Been supporting them for some time, and obviously very, very excited about Brighton and the future of Brighton. Brighton, Laney, very good at attacking down the wings and also defending set pieces. However, weak at avoiding offside, weak at stopping opponents from creating scoring chances, weak at defending counter-attacks, and also very weak at avoiding individual errors and defending against long shots. They attack through the middle, down the left. They like to keep the ball. They like short passes. They do rotate their team a lot, and normally people play aggressively against them. That, for me, especially with their kind of really funny form, it kind of says to us that we may have a little bit of joy on Wednesday night. What do you reckon?
There's a real high possibility of if we can get the game plan right, then yes. You know, I guess you're saying about their form, you know, there's the standout kind of games in the last period where they've got turned over. They lost 4-0 at Luton, lost 3-0 at Fulham not so long ago. So if you can get them on the back foot and you can really push them, Roma did them 4-0 as well. I know, you know, I'm not comparing ourselves with Roma, although probably we're better, to be honest with you, the old Justice League. But, you know, they do also keep it very tight. You know, their sequence of results are kind of like, what is only a one goal in it, or mostly they smashed up Sheffield United, but at the time everyone was. So, yeah, they can keep it tight, but I think we'll actually go for it. I think that's going to be our intention. It should be our intention. And if we can get an early goal, we can get an early second, then I reckon there's joy there. We just have to get the mindset and the tactics right. And I think, you know, there's Thomas Frank did exactly that on Saturday night, and he'll be doing it again tomorrow night. I have no doubt. He knows exactly what we need, mate.
He knows exactly what we need. And ironically, I actually, late yesterday in the evening, I actually passed through Atlanta as well, on the way down to where I am in Florida at the moment now. And we actually saw Brighton play Brentford in Atlanta. And I thought it was really interesting because the way that they played that game was very, very different to kind of how I expected before, where they were actually kind of keeping it tight, Brighton. And you can see they were probably trying to see how they can sort of kind of sit down, soak up pressure, especially if teams kind of hit them on the break, then how can they hit them from that? So they've been obviously working on that season. But like I said to you, they actually did us also, we forgot about that, in Atlanta as well, Brighton did as well. But that was very early on the season, and we were still both testing a lot of things out at the time. So so Brighton game on Wednesday night. I mean, we're expecting the team to be pretty much the same as what did the business against Manchester United. I think it'd probably be very unfair for Thomas Frank to change anything up. I mean, a lot of people are turning around and saying, you know, people like Yarmolenko, he's a young player. Do you put him back in for another game on Wednesday night and then put him back in again on a Saturday for the Aston Villa game? I don't know. He had an excellent game. But do you see any changes from Saturday, Laney?
Yeah, I think Mbeumo comes in for Wiese. I don't think there'll be anything moving around in the back. I think we'll go five at the back again, because that seemed to work with KLP. I don't think we've got, there's no players coming back.
So KLP on the left-hand side, and Roslev with Zanka, Aya, and Collins.
Zanka and Aya in the middle, yeah. Yeah, Jensen, Yanel, Yarmolenko in the middle. I can't see, you know, him being dropped for Damsgaard. I can't see him being dropped for Baptiste. I can't see him being dropped for Onyeka. Onyeka for Yarmolenko, possibly. Damsgaard for, I don't know. Yeah, Damsgaard came on for Yarmolenko on Saturday night. I think we need a bit more beef there. You know, I think Damsgaard can give you a little bit more finesse. He does a lot of running, but he's got no weight to him. I think Yarmolenko's kind of more of a solid player. You put him alongside Yenel, and then let Jensen kind of, you know, ping the balls and play the dainty stuff. That's a really good combination. There's energy there. There's a defensive side to the midfield, but there's a counter-attacking, pacey, young side to that as well. And I like that. I think he's a 19-year-old kid. He's going to be able to recover. I don't think we need to be too worried about, you know, this kind of, oh, you can't play him too much. Well, we've introduced him kind of slowly. We trickle-fed him into the season. Now he's proved what he can be. I think it would be kind of a little bit wrong to take him out of that. If his form dips, yeah, then sub him. But, you know, I think we start him. There's no reason why not. I think if we can get the same energy and we can sort of, you know, put him on the back foot, ask questions, and as fans we can get the atmosphere right again, I think it could be a really memorable night.
Yeah, and also you could argue the point between this Brighton game and the Aston Villa game, which we'll do a little mini pod after this Brighton game. But between those two games, I would have thought that basically, you know, our team, Thomas Frank, all the technical team would probably think that this, if you were going to put a game, which one we were going to win out the two of them, this one would be the game as opposed to the Aston Villa game, which will probably be a little bit trickier and away from home. So maybe you put your cards out for this game, and then maybe that's a game that you rotate the players out as well, don't you think?
Yeah, Villa are up and down as well. So, you know, I think there's a good chance. There's a good chance we can get something out of both, to be honest. But you're right, you know, on home turf, under the lights, following up from Saturday, the momentum is, you know, to improve upon on Saturday, and then we'll see where we stand for this. The weekend,
yeah, and if you had to rotate players out, which one do you choose?
Yeah,
and
that, absolutely,
as a Villa. Manager,
oh, 100% Villa,
yeah, which is all good. So, listen, Lainey, I'm going to ask you for a score prediction.
I'm going 3-1 Brentford.
Oh, 3-1 to the mighty Bees. I'm going to go 2-1 to the mighty Bees. I don't think anyone won the Man United one, actually. I don't think no one went for a draw on that one, but
we both went for wins, didn't we?
We both went for wins, and so we should have done as well, because we were absolutely brilliant. But like I said to you, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Don't forget to write us a review on all good podcast channels. And also, like I said to you, thank you very much for your support. Brighton game's a big game. Hopefully we get the 3 points after that. And after that, we'll come back and we'll talk about the Aston Villa game at the weekend. Like I said to you, we're going out to Nashville. Lots of American Bees out there, and we'll be doing a little podcast from the Nashville, probably after the Bees game out there. But let's concentrate on this Brighton game, because we need to get the 3 points. We're going to go down to there and make lots and lots of noise out there. I'll be making lots of noise down here in Florida as we go. As we say, come on,
you beast.
You beast. Let's beat them seagulls. Definitely.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.